Right then.
Okay.
I do believe we're back.
Good. Okay.
Oh, I'm off the table.
I'll just move slightly down this. I'm not going to put my hands here. Right. Hi, I'm Simon Mercip. Welcome to Crave. This is the webcast, the podcast dedicated to all manner of things entertainment. Music, movies, theatre, television, anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe lately.
And things have been entertaining us. We've got, for example, the pop, rock, once blues, now a bit of everything, but they're juggernauts, whatever way you look at it. Fleetwood Mac, or, well, what the latest incarnation.
What did you call it in your review?
Finwood Mac.
Finwood Mac.
And it suits them, it really does. We'll come to that shortly. Yeah?
Yes. We're going to talk about some movies that deal with children, whether they're for children is another matter.
Ooh.
One of them is a comedy called Good Boys, and if you... Just have to say that Seth Rogen is involved with it, and that's all you need to say.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's the review done, and then we'll move, and then we can move on to...
Well, the second one.
It's even less suitable for kids.
That's right.
Because it's based on a book by...
Stephen King is the author involved here, and this is the follow-up to what was a very commercially successful horror movie of 2 years ago called It.
Now, I love the way you phrased that.
Yes.
It was a commercially...
Yes.
Very successful film.
Yes, it was. And this one, called It Chapter 2...
Creative juices were
...is
there.
So far not as commercially successful and I don't think as critically acclaimed as the previous one was.
Right, fair enough then.
As well as that, Steve, we have something else too, I think.
We do indeed. We're going to have our intrepid guest reviewer, Debbie... carving out her usual niche as our music for the youngsters review. But she's going to be talking about the Australian pop star Troye Sivan.
Excellent.
And what else have we got? I think that's about it, really, isn't
it? That's the main things, but that's enough. It's not to chew on.
It is indeed.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's start with these films, shall we?
I think we should.
As we say, both deal with children, youngsters, 11, 12-year-olds, something around about then, but you wouldn't say you take your... 10-year-old to either of them, I don't think.
I don't know. You'd be allowed to. So we're going to start with Good Boys, aren't we?
Yes, Good Boys. Okay.
Good Boys.
It's a comedy.
It certainly is.
Okay. Would you care to just set the scene for us on this one, Steve?
Right. So you've got three young lads, and I'm referring to my notes here because I don't remember the names off the top of my head.
Okay.
Although, I mean, obviously, there's Max and Luke, who's fairly generic, and then there's a third lad who's called Thor.
Yes.
Yeah. We went completely unremarked upon.
I know.
No one at any point said, seriously? You call Thor? There's no...
This is T-H-O-R, not T-H-A-W, by the way.
Indeed, yeah. Thor. But it's not a... played by Brady Nude. And then Lucas is Keith Williams.
Yes.
And then Max is Jacob Tremblay, who we've seen in things like Wonder, for example.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
he's been around for a wee while. He's coming out a bit of a niche. And so the basic premise is you've got these three young lads who are... They're about 12 years old, so they are right on the cusp of becoming teenagers, but they're still very much mummy's boys. And so that angle of it is really nicely played.
It is.
And Max, played by Jacob Tremblay, is very much in love with, and what's her name? Brixley.
That's right.
A young lady named Brixley, who's,
charming.
I'm sure she's very charming, this young lady. They don't do a whole lot with her, because it's about three boys.
Yes.
And their interaction. And they are, on the one hand, they are sweet and innocent and naive, because they're still 12 and they are still mummy's boys. And yet, at the same time, they swear like troopers. Sailors would blush. And that's a large part of the humour of the film, isn't it, to be fair? I mean, a lot of the gags hang on the fact that Thor, in particular, turns the air blue on a regular basis.
Yes, yes.
And it is funny.
It is funny. And so the premise of the film is that Max... As you said, he's enamoured of Brixley.
Brixley, yes.
And he wants to attend a kissing party.
Kissing party, God bless him.
Where he will be able to consummate his passion for her in a kiss.
Yes.
But they feel that they need to do research on kissing. None of them know really how to do it.
No. Being 12-year-olds, yes.
That's right. Yeah. And this research involves using the camera mounted on Max's father's drone.
Oh, dear Lord, yes.
To spy on some older teenage neighbours.
Yes.
and this leads to all manner of mayhem.
Oh yes.
So I mean that's and the other thing to mention about the story is that the two older teenage girl young women are the sort of the protagonists who are trying to do squaring off against the three young lads for much of the film, and that's that interplay also works very well.
Very 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 well indeed. Yes.
So did you laugh
a lot? I laughed an awful lot. There's one name I'm actually trying to find him in the credits here.
Okay.
But yeah. It becomes a very very funny film because you've got the innocence, and a lot of this is in the trailer, so I won't give you too much away here.
Yeah.
But you've got the innocence of them finding, I think it's Max's, maybe Thor's parents' sex toys.
Yes.
And not having the faintest idea what they're actually all about.
That's right.
And so, on the one hand, it's wildly inappropriate.
Yes.
In fact, the trailer for this film has the three boys sitting talking to Seth Rogen and being told why they're not allowed to even watch the trailer.
That's right.
For the film that they're into. You can talk about this, but you can't watch film of yourself talking about it.
That's right.
And so, I guess it's down to Seth Rogen here that he's actually written a script.
Yes.
I think he wrote it, certainly directed it, didn't he? I'm going to confirm that.
I think he definitely produced it. I don't know if he wrote the script.
No, he didn't. No, he actually neither. Do you know what?
He was a producer.
He's a producer. It's directed by Gene Stubnitsky.
Yes.
Who wrote it also with Lee Eisenberg.
Okay.
So, but it's definitely...
It's got that stamp of Rogen on it, though.
It's got his stench all over it. I think stench is an appropriate word here.
Okay.
But it's what you'd expect from him.
Yeah, and irreverent.
Yes.
Utterly irreverent.
Foul.
Yes.
And yet, I think it's the three lads.
Yeah. So it goes to their friendship.
Yeah.
It goes to the wonder of the, as you say, Steve, that the adolescence that's approaching them and they're sort of trying to figure out what it's all about. They're trying to be grown up and the attempt, horribly. Yes. And the way that they relate to kids on this older group and they're trying to say, you know, what's up, dog?
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. It works really, really nicely.
It does.
Because you see how naive they are on one hand and they're trying to be not naive.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pleasure in that, and a lot of slapstick humour as well as verbal humour. I think I preferred the verbal jousting. Made me laugh mostly.
Yes.
More. But it's a lot to recommend. I thought on the slightly less critical side.
We're allowed to be critical.
Well, I thought it was a little long. But I think that about a lot of movies, so maybe... And I just thought the use of language is an interesting one. The first time you hear these three young lads swear, it's quite shocking. And it works as a tool to sort of wake the audience up and make them realise what it's all about. But after a while, if you do anything like that a lot... The shock value wears off.
So diminishing returns, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, and I kind of got a bit tired of it actually later on. I thought, okay, well, you've made your point. I don't need to hear it every second word anymore.
Yes.
But that's a relatively minor criticism, I think. But I think it was, overall, it kept you on the edge of laughter very, very well.
It was entertaining. I mean, it's interesting that you say that you thought it was a bit overlong.
I did.
It's an hour and 30.
Okay. Well,
which is
not that long,
not shockingly long.
No, it's not.
But it is kind of a one gag film.
And
it also doesn't always quite know which gag it wants to be. I mean, there's a nice little subplot briefly about Stephen Merchant coming and buying a sex doll.
Yes, yes.
Which is played quite nicely for laughs.
Yes,
but it shows that like the three boys swearing at each other and failing at being grown-ups riff can only go so far.
Yeah.
You do need a bit of substance. And that's where the two teenage girls,
who are
kind of the foils to these boys,
that's
where they come in a little bit. So, I mean, it's a slight film.
It is. And you're right. The main thrust of the story is there's little diversions, like the scene where they go into the store and there's the cop there.
Yes.
And that's played quite well. But
that's
really just a little sideshow.
Yes, it is.
They go to try and buy, I think I can say this, well, they go and try and buy some drugs. And there's a fascinating scene with some in a house with some older lads and how they get out of that. And that's very funny.
It is.
I think I'm with you on that. I think it is kind of a one gag thing, and maybe that's why after a while it did feel a little bit long, but
yeah,
it's interesting to be reminded it was only an hour and a half, but it maybe Yeah, interesting. But to be recommended, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not going to be bothering the Oscars too badly. I don't think.
It's not.
And definitely don't take your good boys to go see it.
Yes.
It is frivolous fluff. But there are worse ways of spending a Friday evening.
Oh, I'd say definitely.
Very
definitely.
Much so, yeah.
Yeah. Very, definitely got the sense that everyone leaving the cinema enjoyed it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I was at a screening here in Pukekohe on a Friday evening, and it was almost completely empty.
Oh.
There was the two of us, and then there was about half a dozen lads
right.
who looked about 16.
Okay,
down in front of us, and then behind us, it's like there were three or four more.
Right,
and I commented, you know, oh god, if these guys start making noise through the film, I'm gonna have to use my teacher voice. And I was told, you know, this is not your film; this is their film.
Right,
and they howled with laughter consistently.
Yes,
and I think that's true. It's their film. It wasn't. It's not for us. It's for that.
Yeah.
That audience, and they lapped it up.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So that says a lot, really.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Steve, there's another film that has been out for a little bit now, but it's also got children at the heart of it.
Yeah. Well, yes, among other things.
Among other things. And this is the follow-up to the 2017 horror film It, which itself was a remake of another version of It from the 70s, right?
Yes.
Wasn't it? So this is called It, as you said, imaginatively called It Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the original cast of kids that we saw in the first film and moves forward a number of years to we see them as adults.
Yes.
And we see that the number of years has ticked round whereby the It may return.
Ah, okay.
And so most of the kids have moved out of their small town, but one has remained. He realizes that kids are starting to go missing again.
Okay.
He realizes that the horror has returned.
Yeah.
And he calls upon his mates to return to the town to try and vanquish it once and for all.
Right.
Now, the adult characters, they've actually assembled a pretty decent cast of actors here.
Yeah.
You've got James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list
here, some pretty well-known names.
Very much
and
so,
people
yeah.
who are accomplished actors.
Yeah.
And that what they've also done is they have brought back the same cast of kids.
Mm.
I remember you and I talking about it 2 years ago.
Yeah,
Was it really 2 years ago? My golly.
I tried very hard to forget it, really.
Yeah. But remember we were saying that it was genuinely scary and had, do you remember it had a bit of a nasty edge to it? I don't know if
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of, it was a bit unsettling.
Yeah.
Well, I think this kind of does the same thing. I don't think the story, I've told you what the premise of it is, but we kind of follow a similar feel of you know, grown-up horror.
Okay, yeah.
Some violence, some unsettling scenes. Bill Hader does bring comedy to it, definitely.
Well, yeah.
As you'd expect. I guess the question that I was thinking about this just before the podcast, Steve, when you have a film that follows up another one, in the back of your mind, are you thinking, are they doing this just to make some more money because the first one made money? Or is this a genuine chapter two? Is it a proper progression of the story? And
it's tricky, isn't it?
It is.
Well, here's the thing. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, if I'm not mistaken, Stephen King's original novel isn't a completely linear narrative. It kind of weaves backwards and forwards a little bit.
Okay.
And if I understand it correctly, when they made the first one, who's the director on this? Who gets the blame? there's a director somewhere. Somebody also directed this nonsense. Mm. Here we go. Yeah, Andy Muschietti, that's your man. And the sense I got was they're kind of hedging their bets because the first film basically is the kid stuff.
Yes.
And so it seems like there's two strands interwoven in the novel and they just tease the one out. And let's face it, that's what Stephen King does really, really well is he writes teenage or pre-teenage boys stories.
Yeah.
He writes pre-teenage boys having adventures in small towns in Maine. Because he's basically trying to rehabilitate his own childhood, as far as we can tell. So that's what he does. And so they tease that out. And I think basically at the back of someone's mind was, well, if that one flies, then we'll pull out part two.
Mm. Yep.
And so that's what we've got now.
And when you add to that, I was just checking, there's a website, boxofficemojo.com. So the first film was made just... which, to follow up your point about commercial success, was made with a budget of $35 million.
Really? Is that all?
And made had a worldwide box office return of $700 million.
That is a hell of a return. I like investments like those, yes.
Yes.
Now, that's a very low budget for a Stephen King horror.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this next one, the budget's not recorded, but it's returned so far as half of the first.
Oh, dear.
I felt that it did have a feel of an attempt to capitalize on the success of the first. Although, you know, they justified it within the story. One part worked really well, and this is the interesting part, to go back to what we were saying about the kids and Good Boys.
Yeah.
The part I got most out of was not these top notch quality adult actors.
Yeah.
The return of the kids resonated more.
This is the thought that's coming to my mind. I've not seen it yet. I don't think I will, because I was not a huge fan of the first one.
Right.
But like I say, what Stephen King does best, and so what's going to shine through in the best Stephen King adaptations is going to be the way he writes the interaction between the children. And so I hate to have to say that it sounds like they peaked early.
Well, I probably did.
Yeah.
And they... one part they did well was that... there were some nicely intercut sequences as the older kids go into these houses and speak.
Right,
And they intercut with the younger selves.
Right.
So they're almost looking back in the past of what they were like. They remember what was like as children. So that was nice. But yes, the interaction between the kids was the more potent and the more memorable.
Right.
And it just... And the special effects, they're well done, but I guess... these days, you expect all special effects to be well done.
Yes.
You know, that's not where the heart of the film's going to be. The heart of the film's going to be in the characters and the writing. And the kids did well.
Yep.
Here's one disappointment.
You
may recall
that
in the original film we saw, it was a bit of a love triangle between the sole young girl in the cast.
Yes. And so this is Jessica Chastain in the new one. Yeah.
And there was the sort of the lead boy who was the stutterer whose young brother had been lost.
Yes, yes.
They kind of liked each other, but there was another overweight little lad who secretly loved the girl. So that trio is now transplanted into adult life.
Right.
But the lad who was overweight
mm-hmm.
has now grown up to be a slim, muscular, athletic, good-looking bloke.
Which means that now he's a worthy...
Exactly. So what a cop-out that is.
Yeah.
That is... I was very disappointed by that.
Because we know that the girls only go for good-looking boys, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that was a big cross there. Stephen King's in it.
Is he now?
Yeah. And he's got quite a little
cameo. It is a horror film.
Yeah. Yes, so there you go. So I think... I was interested to see how they did it to follow up. It's not as good as the first, and I know you're saying you didn't think the first was that good anyway. It gets close to pulling it off, but not quite.
Well, there you go. I mean, so there's a number of possible target audiences. We're looking at your hardcore Stephen King fans.
Yep.
They'll embrace it, you reckon?
I guess there's the curiosity factor.
Right.
Where is he going to take the story? Okay. I guess they will.
Okay. People who were, like me, less than overwhelmed by chapter one.
Mm. Well, you may not want to go, you may not be bothered.
No.
No.
And then a disinterested audience. Could you see this without having seen chapter one? Does it make sense? Could it be a standalone film?
I suppose it could be, but I think you get much, much more out of it if you have seen the first
one.
Because of the kids.
That's fair.
Yeah, because you would have had an investment in what happened to them the first time around.
Yeah.
And so it'll mean more to you having seen the first film.
Well, I have to say, you've told me nothing that I think the studios would want to put on a poster.
No.
You're not selling this to
I'm
me.
Not.
So no. No.
It's not awful, but it's not great.
Yeah, that's definitely not one. It's chapter two. It's not awful.
But it's not great. Sorry.
Yeah. We'll take it.
Oh, dear. Right, yes, I'll be getting a call from whatever the studio shortly, I'm sure, wanting to sign me up. Okay, well, anyway, that's the movies for this time around.
Cowboy Junkies will be returning to New Zealand in May of next year for their first show in New Zealand in 20 years. So I've had a quick chat with singer Margot Timmins about songwriting, about... touring and about education. It was quite a fascinating conversation, really. Here she is. Hi, Margot. It's Steve from Crave down in New Zealand. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you?
Yeah, not so bad, thanks. Where are you at the moment?
Yeah. I'm at home in Ontario.
Okay, and what are you working on at the moment? I know you released an album last year, All That Reckoning, so what's keeping you busy at the moment?
Well, I run a school, so I'm getting ready to open the school and get it all started. School starts next week for our kids, so
that's
what I'm doing. I'm not making anything music. It's all about school.
Fair, that's an unusual day job for a rock star. Okay, fair enough. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, well, thing I had to do. I had a passion. My son's had difficulty in school his whole life, and so I decided, oh, hell with public school. I'm going to open my own school. And so I did.
How fantastic. Well, if you don't mind, let's talk about that for a moment. What level of school are you running?
Sorry?
What age groups, what grades of school are you running there? That's fascinating.
The day school is elementary, so it's grade 1 to grade 8. And then in evenings, we do a lot of tutoring for high school students and things like that. A lot of tutoring.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And do you teach yourself?
Oh, no. I'm just I do all the administration and the invoicing and the, you know, getting things organized. I'm the big boss. I boss everybody around.
Outstanding.
But I have a partner who's in the school. She opened it with me. She's got a master's in education, and she's the main teacher. So she does all the curriculum, and she believes in teaching like I do. We have the same philosophy that, you know, the kids, basically our school is, kids learn at their own rate and they learn in different ways. And
right.
This whole idea of putting everybody into grades and everybody has to learn like this.
Yep.
And if you don't, then you fail and too bad, you're a big loser, you know, and you'll never amount to anything if you don't get through grade 3. So, you know, this nonsense that we teach our children right now makes me crazy. And I thought, you know, enough's enough. And at one point I took my child out and homeschooled him, and I realized homeschooling is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, let's start this kind of, you know, alternative school where kids learn and are happy and are excited about it. And this is our third year doing it, and it's great. It's hugely successful. It's become a full-time job. It's crazy, but I'm happy. It makes me proud, and when I go to the school, I'm happy to see these kids thriving, and you know, they're all excited about coming back to school. You know, that's unusual.
Oh, that's fantastic. So here was me expecting to do an interview with a singer about her upcoming tour, and we're talking education. That's not quite what a brief,
yeah,
but that's,
exactly.
That's wonderful. That's,
well, I can go on a long time with education.
Well anyway. I'm a teacher myself, so one of these days I'll have to do that interview with you.
I'd love that. I'd love to talk about it. It really is a passion for me. I mean, I wanted to be a teacher, but somehow I became a musician. So I don't know. But it breaks my heart just the way kids are taught these days. And I, you know, these teenagers come to you with all these anxieties about school, and I just, you know, none of them know how to write a sentence. And it's hideous. It's just it's horrible.
Absolutely.
You know? And yeah.
We'll tell you what, then. Principal Margot, the accidental rock star. So,
I'll switch hats.
Switch hats. Let's talk about All That Reckoning, 2018's album.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been listening to your music since the early days, and I remember when you used to be tagged with the title Alt Country. Does that still apply anymore?
Well, you know, we never really named ourselves or labeled ourselves what kind of music, because we always thought that was for the journalists to do.
Right, right.
So I guess I should ask you, does it really, you know, count anymore? I don't know. We've never thought of ourselves in terms of, you know, what is this? Is this jazz or is this country? You know, we just play. And
right.
whatever people call it, they call it. And hopefully they call it and like it. So, you know, they label it and then like it. Well, that's what we hope. But we don't think about it.
Fair enough. And let me ask you a slightly unusual question. Do you consider yourselves an essentially Canadian band? Because I know, like, for example, the Tragically Hip were extraordinarily Canadian in many of the lyrics, but I listen to what you guys sing, and it's less so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, individually, I think we all believe, you know, we're very strongly Canadian. Mm. As a band, no. I mean, our country hasn't really recognized us. You know, we've never won a Juno. The only times we've ever had to cancel a gig because of lack of sales is being in Canada.
Oh, no.
one that was in our hometown.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, to be fair, we really focus on the States and Europe. That was sort of, I mean, we play Canada, of course, but... Yeah. It really, the market that we worked on was down in the States. We just figured there were more people in smaller spaces. And, you know, so that's where we went. And all our managers and our labels were all American, and they didn't really care about Canada. So, you know, to be fair, we didn't really work it. But, yeah, I don't think we're considered a Canadian band. I think most people would think we're American.
Yeah, well, no, certainly. On your new album, the song "The Things We Do to Each Other," you sing about you can control hate, and I'm hearing a subtext in those lyrics, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that song really reflects what's going on in our world right now, and I definitely in the States for sure. But I think, unfortunately, what happens in the States often trickles over to what's going, you know, to the rest of the world. And it opens the floodgates for all of us to behave badly.
Right.
And it's frightening. And it really, really is. I mean, I think it's right now, people who have had that kind of hatred in them have been given permission to express it. Where before, we, you know, they were condemned. Now
yes.
It's okay to say what you want to say and do what you want to do.
Yeah. And what surprises me is I mean, the album is your typical very, very calm, very, very introspective stuff. And that's possibly the most upbeat song on the album.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Well, you know, I think, again, it's a reflection of who we are. You know, we've never been a big, strong political statement type of band.
Right.
We might have made political statements, but they're just sort of just, hey, this is what I think, not, hey, this is what you should think.
Right.
You know, as a political statement kind of band does, which is perfectly fine. It's just not our way. And so, again, I think that song reflects who we are. We're not trying to ram anything down anybody's throats. We're just expressing our sadness and our dismay and our, you know, maybe it's a bit of like, I don't know. For me, when I watch what's going on in the States, I'm in just disbelief. Like I'm watching some sort of odd sitcom or something. I can't believe it. I can't believe Trump. I can't believe that this is really happening. So to me, that's the way I would express it. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I were to get too deep into it, I don't think I'd come out of my sadness. You know, it's just so horrific what's going on. So I don't know. It's just the way we present things. It's just like, okay, this is shitty. Everybody look if you want to look, but then we're going to go into another song.
No, fair enough. Well, speaking of going into other songs, tell me about the set list for your upcoming tour, because you're going to be down here in New Zealand next year, and we're looking forward to the show. What can we expect to hear?
Well, we usually do two sets. The first set will mainly have songs off of the new album, All That Resonates. And it'll be a shorter set. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and we do as many of off the old albums as we can. And
right.
The second set changes every night. So, you know, people who come to see us several nights just might get their favorite song. There's just so many albums now to pick off of. It's hard to hard to hit people's favorites. And of course, every night we have to do Sweet Jane. And,
of course.
You know, that's a given.
Yeah.
But that's how we do it. And it seems to work, you know, because like, we sort of feel, you know, sometimes it's hard for an audience to listen to new material.
Yeah.
And because they come to hear their favorite songs or their favorite album. And I get it. I'm the same, you know, when I go see other people play. So we just, but of course, you know, that's where we're on the road. We're trying to sell this stuff. So
right.
so we will have to present it in some way.
Are you open to requests?
Oh, yes. We do requests, love requests.
Right.
Well, it's often people ask for something obscure and I have to figure it out.
Well, I'm going to put my word in right now and, and beg that you play Powder Finger when you come.
Which one?
When you come to Auckland, please play Powder Finger.
Powder Finger, okay. I will put that in. I'm going to put it on my calendar, otherwise I'll forget.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
And one of my fondest concert memories, I was there when you recorded In the Time Before Llamas in Manchester. And I remember somebody calling out witches and you actually apologised because it was not something you were ready to sing that night. And I've never heard a singer actually apologise to a member of the audience for a request before.
Well, I'm Canadian. That's what we do.
it was possibly the most Canadian thing I've ever heard, yes.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. When I do a show, I feel like I'm the hostess. We've asked you to come here. We've asked you to sit and listen to our music, and you said yes, and here we are. And I feel it's my job to give you what you want or what you know. And so when I can't, for whatever reason, I do feel apologetic. I feel a little bit that I've, you know, let you down a bit. And so we do try. I mean, most of the time when people yell out for requests, we can usually do them.
No, fair enough.
But, you know, sometimes they're obscure and we haven't done it for a million years and I have no idea how it goes.
But I mean, you mentioned Sweet Jane and I get the feeling you probably wouldn't escape the venue alive if you didn't play it. Do you ever feel a little bit saddled with that? Yeah. Like it's become a bit of a duty?
It's definitely a duty, but it's not a difficult one. I mean, to have a song that is attached to you is pretty amazing thing, you know. I certainly, as a young band, we never thought that we'd have a song that people insisted we play.
Yeah.
So we switch that, but you know, it changes all the time. I mean, you're not going to get the same Sweet Jane that we would have played 10 years ago. I mean, it's constantly changing, and you know, and then sometimes it goes right back. Like right now, we've been sort of saying, because we've been really jamming it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on the last tour, I said, you know what, let's bring it right back to the original, like really back to the original, which we haven't done in years, you know. So maybe you will get the Trinity Session version. But, you know, as they say, you know, it's not my favorite song to sing. I love singing the newer songs. Of course, because they're newer and fresher. But I'm always grateful because I find it kind of, you know, that we have a song that's attached to our name.
Right.
And you know, bands would kill for that.
Yeah, true.
So you can't complain.
So what then is the highlight from the new album? You say there's some songs you particularly enjoy singing. What's your favourite?
Oh, gosh. I think I love the things we do to each other, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I love the sentiment of it. I love this, you know, I love the beat. I love the tempo. We start off with the slow version of All That Reckoning, which is a real challenge to do, the first song. And sometimes I love doing that one because of the challenge of it. It can, you know, I always can do a nice job, but sometimes I can really, you know, like nail it. And it's a nice way to start the show. Yeah, I got that one, you know. So I love that challenge. But it depends on my mood too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if I'm in a sad mood, then I like all the sad, soft, lonely ones, and, you know, get into my own sadness. So, yeah, it changes.
Yeah, fair enough. So you guys are going to be down here in March. You've not been to New Zealand in quite some time. Are you planning to do any travelling while you're down here? Are you going to explore a little bit?
I wish. My son, he's 16 and still in high school, he's coming with me. He works on our crew. So for him to take off 3 weeks is already too much school to take off. But right. I'm a firm believer he learns more on the road than he does in the classroom. We're back right. to education again.
Of course.
But I do, you know, and the school that he's at is great. They do allow him to travel with me. And but I have to get him back. So unfortunately, I'm not. I know some of the other guys are. I'd love to, but obligations.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, unfortunately, yeah. time appears to be getting the better of us right now, so we're going to have to wrap up there. But Margot Timmins from okay. Cowboy Junkies, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Well, thank you, and thanks for supporting the show. That's great. And Powdered Finger and Offman, for sure.
Pick up, Mama, there's a white boat coming down the river with a big red beacon and a flag and a man on the rail. I think you better call John, 'cause it don't look like they're here to deliver the mail. And it's less than a mile away. I hope they didn't come to stay. It's got numbers on the side and a gun, and it's making big waves. Daddy's gone, my brother's out hunting in the mountains. Big John's been drinking since the river took Avenue. So the powers that be left me here to do all the...
Well, that was the Cowboy Junkies, but let's deal with some music much more recent. Steve's on a wee break, and Debbie's with us. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
As our sort of resident young person pop music expert.
Okay.
Much more than Steve and I.
Okay.
you've seen a guy, interesting guy, born in South Africa.
Right.
But I think he's been...
He's pretty Aussie.
Pretty Aussie, yeah. Raised in Aussie, and he's made his career in Aussie. Troy right. Sivan.
Right.
I don't know much about him. I've done a little bit of reading. He seems a really interesting chap. But yeah. Tell me about his show that was in Auckland just recently.
Okay, well... just a little bit of background on me. I saw him 3 years ago at the town hall.
Right.
And he was fantastic. I loved him then, so kind of started following his music, really enjoyed his music. So when he came to Auckland again this year, got tickets, and he played at Spark Arena this time. He did bring the stage in a little bit.
Okay.
So it was a little bit more intimate.
Yes.
But... filled that area, which was great. Lots of fans.
Okay, so are we basically talking pop again?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, he's a pop star.
Yeah.
So.
And
started off as a YouTube vlogger. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting how that's become a.
Yeah, well, he kind of started off, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't know about him then, but I think he was just sort of doing skits and things like that. So he's not just a singer songwriter.
Okay. I mean, talents. When you say pop these days, that can mean a lot of things now.
Yeah.
Can you give me a bit more of a sense of his style of music?
Not really, I don't know.
What I mean is...
He's just pop.
The thing that I was interested in, the little bit of reading I did, some people have said his voice... I tend to think of pop singers as sort of having maybe high voices.
Oh,
and
really? Okay.
But he doesn't, does he? He's got a baritone voice, apparently.
Yeah.
He's got quite a nice deep voice.
Yeah, and I never would have thought that pop music...
It's showing my prejudice.
I guess so. Okay, all right. Yeah, I had never thought of it that way. No, he's got a fantastic voice, and he's quite a great showman, so it was really fun.
Yeah.
There was a nice mixed crowd of mostly young people, of course, but both men and young men and young women.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a good smattering of LGBTQ yeah. folks.
Because he's a kind of a campaigner for gay rights,
he is.
Isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah. He's kind of an icon. Yeah. So for LGBT.
Did that form part of his chit chat with the audience at all?
Yeah, I think it did a bit. Yeah, I remember. So this particular concert, the theme was floral. It's the Bloom Tour, but I know that he had. I think it was somewhere in Australia. He had like a cowboy theme, so people dressed up a bit.
Oh, okay.
So they wore flower crowns and you know things like that, and a lot of people did have rainbow flags and you know all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he did talk a little bit about his coming out, and he interacted with the crowd, and I think there was someone who was wearing a some kind of an LGBT flower crown something or he's like, oh, how gay is that? You know, so yeah, it is a bit of his shtick, yeah. I suppose.
And, did he have a big band with him, or was it more one of those sort of tightly
pretty tight
bands?
He had some background singers that were quite good. I'm not familiar with who they were, but yeah, really really good singers.
Okay,
so that was good.
Now I want to ask you about you mentioned he was good on stage and put on a good show. I was reading about him and he's got a particular medical condition.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Called Marfan syndrome, which apparently...
Oh, what Marfan's is. Yeah.
Okay, so that you can have very loose limbs,
long
limbs.
Right, heart defects.
How did he appear to you? Did he look like a skinny, long-limbed chap?
Yep, he certainly did. Yeah, I remember thinking that. I'm like, God, he's a little slip of a thing, really. Yeah. So yeah, I didn't realize he had more fans.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, okay.
He didn't reference that at all?
No, I don't remember him saying that at all. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
If he did, I missed it.
Oh, well, you're having too much of a good time.
Right, yeah. Lots of excitement.
Yeah. What about, he's a fan of Lord, apparently.
Oh, okay.
He didn't sing any Lord songs? Do any covers?
Nope. Not that I know of, no.
Cool. Hey, so, and was it, as far as you could tell, that it was all his stuff that he was singing, his own stuff?
Yeah, he does a song with Charlie XCX, 1999. So he did that song. And when I'd seen her earlier in the year, she did that song as well at her concert. So that was kind of cool.
They both lay claim to it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And for someone who's like me, who's not a big follower of young person's pop, and you've told us about a lot of acts you've seen in the last little while.
Yeah.
I don't know, where would you put him in some of the, if you look back over the last little while, would you say, oh, he's Simon, I'd be recommending, you don't go to many of these shows, but you go see Troy. Or not?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. I still feel like that he's sort of still in the up and coming kind of stage. That's my thought. I don't know if anyone
else. Well, he's still a young man.
Agree. He's still quite young and he hasn't really been, performing that long, I don't think, in terms of, gosh, some of the acts were talking about like Fleetwood Mac and stuff.
Sure.
And the Cowboy Junkies. But yeah, so he's still kind of up and coming. I think he's quite good. I mean, I think he'd probably enjoy it. He does make for a nice intimate concert. So like I said, he brought the stage forward.
Yeah.
And the way he talks with people, and he actually talked with specific people, like pointed them out and said, oh, I love that yellow top you're wearing or the flower crown that you have on. And, actually spoke to people. And,
well, that is an intimate way of conducting a concert.
And so it really felt that way. And there was one song, and I can't remember which one it was, but he said, I want to get everybody dancing. He said, so, if you have to, close your eyes. He goes, it's just me and you, together. And you really kind of felt that way. You kind of felt like it was just really intimate. So
that's a great example of stagecraft, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
of knowing how to connect with an audience.
Yeah, he was very good at that, and his fans absolutely loved it. So,
you got me interested now.
Yeah, next time he comes to town. It was 3 years ago that he was here.
Yeah, well, he's only over in Australia. He'll be back.
You'd think so, but yeah, that's not always the case.
No. Okay, great. Hey, thank you very much for that, Debbie.
Could I mention just the opening act?
Apparently, you could.
Her name was Thelma Plum. She's from New South Wales. And
Thelma Plum.
Yes.
That's a good name.
And she was great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that I should probably look her up and find out a little bit more about her.
Okay. But also pop?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, a little bit more ballady kind of, I guess. Yeah. So
it's a name to look out for.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be looking her up.
Thank you. Cheers.
All right.
You're still around. Can I miss you? I need you now. Yeah, I need you.
Well, so from Troy Sivan and before that, Cowboy Junkies. Now Steve is back to talk about a band who's been around for a lot longer.
Right, yeah. So if we're talking about Troy Sivan addressing the younger generation, then we're going to exactly the opposite end of the spectrum, aren't we? We've referred to them as Crowded Mac or Fleetwood House. But yeah, Fleetwood Mac came to town maybe about a week ago, I guess. Yeah. And yeah, you were out of town, so you had to miss it. I'm afraid you missed an absolute treat.
And you really did. And I regretted that I couldn't go because I was keen to see them. I'd never seen Fleetwood Mac anyway.
Yeah.
I was keen to see, obviously, how Neil Finn fitted in.
Of course.
And I was also really keen to see Mike Campbell because I've been a big fan of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Yes.
And to see their main guitarist up there on stage playing guitar would have been great.
Well, you really would have enjoyed it then.
Damn.
Because obviously, you know, Lindsey Buckingham decided he had something better to do with his time. And so they drafted in Finn and Campbell to take over for the two of them to fill his one role.
Yes.
And so you ended up with, you know, the core lineup. You've still got Mick Fleetwood with a drum kit that's front and centre. It's very much his band. A huge drum set that's not hiding off, tucked away in the back. It's basically he's a key member of the band, clearly, in terms of the performance. John McVie was much more in the wings. Apparently he doesn't like the spotlight. So it's fine because Mick Fleetwood takes his share as well.
Okay.
You've got Christine Perfect sitting on keyboards. And then sadly there's one more name we do have to mention.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. So here's the deal. They came on stage and they kicked off, they opened with The Chain.
Yep. Okay.
Now, as I wrote in my on my review on our website, that's cravepodcast.com, it's not so much a set opener as a statement of intent.
Okay.
Because that's the song you say for your encore, isn't it? That's your big hit. That's your big triumphant number. Yeah. They opened with that.
Right.
Which I think was interesting, but it basically said, look, this is who we are.
Mm.
We're back, and you're damn well going to pay attention to us.
Yeah. And also with that song, Steve, I presume then Neil Finn is taking the lead vocal on The Chain.
Yes, he is. He's taking Lindsey Buckingham's vocal, yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's possibly one of the reasons why they kick-started with that. And he was glorious.
Good.
Let there be no doubt whatsoever. Stevie Nicks and Mick Fleetwood both spoke very, very highly of him. But you could tell, like, he wasn't there for novelty value.
No.
He wasn't there because he couldn't find anybody else. He was there because he damn well belonged there.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant. He was very, very, very good. His voice is still strong.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely worth being there to hear him sing. Mike Campbell,
yes,
is superb.
Yeah.
So they, I'm trying to remember. Oh God, I don't have my notes in front of me. For shame.
It's all right.
I'm going to refer to my website.
No, please do.
Because I want to get my facts straight on this.
So he did because there was a Mike Campbell. One of the famous old Fleetwood Mac songs.
That's what I'm looking for.
Oh Well.
Which is an old Peter Green number.
Yes.
Which has got a really, really fast, really tricky riff, and he just tore through it. And he sounded good with it.
Yeah.
And you're reminded, you know, before Rumours and before Tusk and before all that kind of stuff, they were a blues band.
Yeah.
And Mike Campbell fits into that dimension of it every bit as well as he fits into the pop rock and all the modern stuff. So he was fantastic. Christine Perfect, they kept her voice kind of down in the mix because she's 76 years old.
Is she?
That's what I thought too.
really?
And you'd never guess.
Wow.
But, I mean, her voice is possibly, I mean, dear God, I hope I sound and look that good when I'm 76, seriously. But she's doing well.
Gosh.
Mick Fleetwood did a 12-minute drum solo, which at one point I'm thinking, you know, really? And by the end of it, I'm going, yeah, that actually, barking mad, but he made it work. I mean, in fact, at the very end, after the band left the stage, he then walked up to Neil Finn's microphone. He had to bend over, stoop to speak into it, because he's tall and Neil Finn isn't.
Yes,
but he spoke for like 2 or 3 minutes, saying, "We love doing this. We can't do this at home in our living room. So we love the opportunity." He spoke for like 2 or 3 minutes. And he sounded genuinely honest and sincere when he's saying, we love doing this.
Right.
Because they can't be doing it for the money anymore.
No.
Not at this stage. No. So they clearly enjoy doing it.
So, okay, you're holding off talking about Stevie. Come on, let's get to Stevie.
Okay, so when she was good, she was very good.
Okay.
And this to be fair, so she did a duet with Finn.
Mm-hmm.
They did I Got You.
Oh, lovely. Split is it lovely? I mean, yes.
It actually was, yeah. They made it work.
Okay.
Really, really well. And she did a little intro talking about how she heard the song on the radio years ago and she's delighted to now get to play it with Neil Finn. And that worked. Because, let's face it, in her day, her register was like this big, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is that today, her register is about this big. She simply hasn't got the range. And again, she's in her 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's reasonable. Because let's face it, I mean, do we have to have a rule now that everyone has to retire when they hit 70?
No.
Yes.
You know what I know what you're saying. We'll come to that later.
Yes. Happy Bruce Day.
Happy Bragging.
Yeah. So she's in her 70s, and it's inevitable that your range will narrow.
Sure, of course.
Especially for, I mean, instruments, it's all about dexterity, but for your voice, that's inevitably going to narrow, and hers has.
Okay.
And it's a shame. So when she's doing mid-range songs like I Got You, she can pull it together. When she was trying to do, now what was it? I mean, The Chain.
Right.
She droned.
Okay.
I don't know any other word for it.
Okay.
When she was trying to do...
she did Gold Dust Woman or that?
Gold Dust Woman.
Yeah.
Started off, she sounded like raspy.
Mm.
Now, if you listen to classic songs by Stevie Nicks, like An Edge of 17 is a great example, and it's not a Fleetwood Mac song, but there's a certain sort of buzzsaw edge to her voice.
Yes, yes.
That really, really works.
Yeah, yeah.
But unfortunately, it's almost like the blade on the buzzsaw has gone dull.
Okay, that's interesting.
And now it just sounds a bit harsh and abrasive. She hasn't got it anymore, and it's a shame.
Yeah.
But obviously, these are the songs that people want to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, they're not going to get out alive if they don't play those.
No. Well, that's... I was thinking back to the show we saw that she did a couple of years back. The thing that really bothered me about the show, this is just my view, was I found her long rambling stories I got bored with. Although I did speak to genuine Nicks fans later who lapped it up. I found that too distracting. Apart from Mick Fleetwood's 2 or 3 minute little speech, were there other big talking sessions?
There was occasions when, there was one bit where after Nicks and Finn had done a song together, and then you've got Christine Perfect going, "So Neil, how come you're not going to do a duet with me?" And you're thinking, yeah, really? Because it doesn't say so on the set list that you've played the same night for the last three weeks.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah. So on that level, it was a little bit forced and a bit. Yeah. Here's one thing that did fall flat in that regard. And again, it's possible that you and I are very, very Nick's jaundiced.
Maybe. Yeah.
I'm open to that possibility.
Yes.
But again, it ties into my big specific criticism of what you were talking about earlier. One thing that she did in that solo show, it was about 2 weeks after Tom Petty had died.
Right, yes.
It wasn't that Tom Petty had died.
Mm.
It was that Stevie's mate Tom had died.
Right.
And there's a subtle but important shift there, right? So Neil Finn got a solo spot.
Right.
And he played Don't Dream It's Over.
Yes.
And it was exquisite.
Yeah.
Oh. Now, it's kind of surprising with song. There's a beautiful, thrumbling little bass line that runs through that song in the Crowded House version. And I think John McVie playing that would have been extraordinary.
Okay.
But he didn't.
Okay.
I'm a bit disappointed. It was just Finn on his acoustic guitar.
Okay.
But then Nicks did join him at the end for a bit of background vocals. And again, she was within her range and it worked well.
Okay.
But that was it. It was just Finn.
Okay.
It was all about Neil.
Yes.
And I mean, let's face it, the man can sing.
Yeah. Oof. He's got a great pop sort of voice.
Didn't we see him that one time?
Yes.
When he came Johnny Marr from the Smiths. Yeah. Yes. We know he's good.
Yeah, we do.
We see he was in Power Station or Spark Arena. The man's good. But it was all about him. And it was lovely. But obviously, they're giving a nod to the two new members' history. So Mike Campbell played Free Falling.
Okay. One of the big Tom Petty hits.
Which he didn't write.
No, he didn't.
No, and that's kind of odd. It was, what's his face? I can't remember.
Oh, hold on. Whoa. Sorry, you mean Tom Petty didn't write it?
No.
Mike Campbell didn't
write it. Campbell and Petty wrote an awful lot of stuff, but Free Falling
was Petty.
And I can't think of the guy's name now. Travelling Wilburys dude. But anyway.
Jeff Lynne.
Yeah. But it wasn't a Mike Campbell song.
No.
But it's a famous song.
It isn't.
That he played on, that people would know.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would have rather been like Running Down a Dream, which has got a stronger guitar line and was a Campbell composition.
Yes.
But they played Free Falling because it's a good, well-known, popular song. And behind, on the screen, there were stills of Petty. Petty and Campbell. And have a guess who it was.
Ooh. Maybe has Nix made some appearance?
Petty and Nix.
Right.
Never forget. Yeah. It's not just that he's Tom Petty. Yeah. He's Steve's mate, Tom Petty. Yeah. And you're not allowed to forget that.
No.
And that's my problem. It seems like she has to interject herself into stuff in the ways that the other people don't. And that's kind of my problem with her.
Yeah.
Is it's a very American thing.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
I want to ask you, because I remember when they first started touring, I did go and see a few clips of them on YouTube. There were some when their first early concerts.
Yeah.
And one thing that struck me was, in some of the songs that I saw anyway, Neil Finn, I guess for most of the time, he was standing in the center of stage, probably.
Oh, yeah.
And he would, he seemed to be like walking around and sort of just keeping an eye on people, G'ing them up. It felt like he was the general of the troops a little bit. I know you were saying Mick Fleetwood had his drum kit had a central position, but in those clips that I saw, and this is some months ago, it felt like he was really integral to what was going on stage.
Very, very much so, yeah. In terms of, I mean, you mentioned stagecraft in the context of Troye Sivan.
Yeah.
And very, very much so. The show revolved around Finn and Nix.
Right.
They were the front people for the
right.
show, very,
right.
very much
right.
so. And in that regard, Nix has still got it. She cuts a fine figure.
Yeah.
She looks good on stage. She's got the long, flowing blonde hair. She's all in black.
Yeah.
She knows how to work a crowd.
Yes.
I think I've just taken against her personally.
Okay.
But yeah, it was very much, they led the show.
Okay.
Very much so. And when it came to introducing songs, that kind of fell more to Nix than to Finn.
Right.
Just simply because she's got the history with the band.
Yeah,
it would make more sense.
Yeah, that does.
But yeah, it felt like they'd always been part of the band.
Oh, that's...
They didn't come across as being bolt-ons.
No.
They weren't presented as new boys, except very, very occasionally.
Yes.
It didn't feel like they were... I mean, the set list was all the classics. They did, you know, Don't Stop.
Yeah.
You know, they did all the songs that you'd expect to hear.
No, that's right.
It was Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. To the extent that, I mean, I never saw them with Lindsey Buckingham.
No.
And I don't feel like I need to.
No.
I don't feel like I must have missed something in the same way that, you know, I mean, I didn't get to see Queen with Freddie Mercury.
No.
I've only seen Queen with Adam Lambert. It's a perfectly good show, but he's not Freddie.
No.
I don't feel like I missed out on seeing
Lindsey
Buckingham.
Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I just added a quick, very quick aside.
Yeah.
You mentioned Running Down a Dream,
yeah.
a Tom Petty song. I've got at home a 4-CD live anthology of Petty's career the band. And one of the highlights of the whole 4 CDs is Mike Campbell's live solo at the end of Running Down a Dream.
Which is,
it
all
is,
the more reason why that's what
it
they
was. It is fantastic.
Yeah.
I would say buy the whole thing just to listen to that solo.
Excellent, yeah.
Which anyway.
It's a shame they didn't pick that one. But one interesting little detail, you mentioned about Lord when you were asking Debbie.
Yes.
And guess who was at Fleetwood Mac?
Oh, was she?
She's about two rows in front of us, just down the way.
Oh, really?
I felt like calling across and saying, yo, Ella. Evening,
there you
pet.
Go.
But
I should have brought her up on stage.
Well,
Oh,
thank you.
A digital reminder or something.
Yes, that was Siri wanting to comment on our review. she did actually get mentioned. I think it was Stevie Nicks. It was either her or Christine Perfect. One of the two did mention something about a dear friend of ours is in the audience tonight.
Oh, okay.
And it was unmistakably her.
Yes.
I
think she mentioned Lord in her own show 2 years ago. I think that Stevie did.
Probably, she did. But what I do know is, after Mick Fleetwood finally shut up, I mean, the man can talk. Seriously. But again, like I said, it felt ingenuous. It really did. It was actually quite sweet to listen to. This is a bloke who's, he's in his 70s. Like I say, he can't possibly need the money any longer.
No.
He clearly enjoys just giving his skins a good pound. But after he'd finally cleared off, the house lights went down.
Uh-huh.
Because at the moment, there's only a spotlight on him. That went off. And I'm thinking, well, I've seen the set list. There's nothing else left to come. What the hell's gone on here? And the lights stayed down for about a minute and a half.
Oh, okay.
And then when they came up, And I'm thinking, I wonder if I'll be walking out behind Lord, I'll say hi and see get a quick comment from her for the review.
Yeah.
She was gone. So I reckon they kept the lights down so they could smuggle her off backstage while no one was looking.
Yeah, I think you're right.
She would have been she was at the end of the row in about row 10 from the front, and there was there was no pit, it was seating all. And yeah,
I think you're right.
Ghosted her out.
Makes sense.
Yeah. But she was there and she seemed to be enjoying it.
Good.
And I mean, if you've got any music in you, and let's face it, I think young Miss Yelich does.
Yes.
You'd appreciate it. And also, one last thing, since we were talking about the pop music thing,
yes,
that's the second time in the last few years I've heard The Chain performed on the stage at Spark Arena.
Okay, and where was the first time?
Harry Styles from One Direction.
Ah.
Because it's one thing they do. They're always on a show, you know, they have a rich musical hinterland. They're not just boy band members. So what's the Niall Horan is the other member of the band that I've seen there from One Direction. He played Dancing in the Dark.
Because
they want to show, look, see, I've got depth, really. I'm not just all hair and teeth. I've got depth as well. And Harry did The Chain.
Okay.
And this was better. The only problem was John McVie's bass was really low in the mix.
Okay.
And I was gutted because I was just waiting to hear
dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Yeah, that one.
And,
okay.
And I had to listen for it. I was gutted.
Anyway, you've succeeded in persuading me, not that I needed much persuading, that I missed out on an event.
Now,
but I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Finwood Mac, as henceforth they need to be known, were outstanding.
Great.
They genuinely, genuinely were. So that's the past dealt with.
Okay, thank you.
Listen to the wind blow. Down comes the night. Run in the shadow.
future is ahead of us.
It certainly is.
Tends to be. What's coming up in the next little while that we should be keeping an eye on, do you think?
Well, unfortunately, I'm off to England on Saturday.
You are.
So, bugger off, he's got back from Canada. And I'm going to miss. And I don't know if I'm going to miss out or if I dodged a bullet here.
Right.
But I'm going to miss the press preview of Joker.
Ah, I signed up for it.
Yeah. So you're gonna have to let me know. Did I miss a treat or did I get away with my life?
Yeah. So this is Joaquin Phoenix playing the role, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because Heath Ledger, of course, apparently made it his own film back in 2000, whenever it was, when he was in that second of those Christopher Nolan trilogies, in a role that didn't necessarily occupy a lot of screen time, but boy, did he just knocked the audience for six.
Yes.
But we didn't get a huge amount of backstory at all.
No.
So here we have an entire film devoted to the character of the Joker. It's had mostly very, very good reviews, but there have been one or two which have suggested it didn't quite work. So it's interesting. We're looking forward to seeing what to make of it.
Well, my big concern is the last time we saw the Joker on screen, he was in Suicide Squad.
True,
and as a result, I'm kind of nervous.
Yeah,
that's what's giving me pause there. You see, so I don't know, but there's some music coming up.
Okay,
that's worth mentioning.
Yeah,
there's a few festivals, one of which I'll save till the end.
Okay,
I think we've met the Good Vibes Summer Festival is going to be in Gisborne on Saturday the 11th of January. Gisborne.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say that again? There's actually going to be a festival in Gisborne.
Which is the other one that's down that way? Every summer.
Sunsplash is in Mount Maunganui.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we covered that last week, actually. Time, yeah. Good Vibes is in Gisborne.
Okay.
So Stan Walker's going to be there. House of Shem tomorrow, people. So it's very definitely sort of your Kiwi roots kind of end of the spectrum.
Cool.
So not to be fair, my thing. I don't necessarily think yours either, to be fair.
Simon. Not hugely, you know? but it's a good thing to have on the calendar and a good choice to have in your selection.
If you like that sort of thing, you'll like that sort of thing.
You will.
Right, so I'm just shocked by Gisborne. there's Ella May, who's a young British singer, R&B songstress, I believe is the word we're supposed to use these days.
Yeah.
And she's going to be at the Logan Campbell Centre on January the 5th. Who else have we got coming up? Over in Fangamata, Shapeshifter are going to be playing New Year's Eve.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yeah. At Joe's Farm, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, isn't it? It's kind of an interesting part of our sort of cultural calendar that in that summer period, a lot of bands leave the big city and just head out to places like Coromandel or up north or Mount Maunganui, and they just, you know. So if you're out and about, you've got a chance to see some decent music.
Very, very definitely, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, Shapeshifter, who I saw at the URO's Christchurch benefit.
Right. Yes.
Quite impressed then. And they've got Tiki Tane and Sunshine Sound System supporting them, so that's going to be a decent night out, I would imagine. Slightly more conventional old person music. Ben Harper.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the Innocent Criminals.
Now, I saw him for Crave.
I know you did, yeah.
And I thought he was great. I'd heard so much about him in the past, never seen him before.
Yeah.
And that was definitely one of my highlights of our long and esteemed career on Crave,
Steve. Well, you have a choice of shows to go to, then.
Thank you.
New Plymouth, Christchurch, Auckland or Napier.
Okay. Where's he playing in Auckland, just by the way?
Logan Campbell Centre.
Okay.
On Thursday, February the 27th.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Going even further back in history, Randy Newman.
Wow, that is going back further in history.
A little bit. Also, in February, he's going to be at the Civic Theatre.
Yep. Okay.
You're making notes of that.
I'm making notes of Ben Harper.
If only there were a website where you could find all this information, Simon.
I know, yeah.
So, Randy Newman's going to be doing Sunday, February the 9th. He's at the Civic Theatre in Auckland.
Thank you.
And then two nights later on the 11th, he's at the Wellington Opera House.
Okay.
In Wellington.
Okay. Surprisingly enough. Okay. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, the big announcement in music is going to be Laneway.
Okay.
They've released... we've known the date for a while. It's Monday the 27th of January.
Right,
because it's Auckland anniversary.
Yes, Auckland anniversary, right.
Right.
So last year, Florence and the Machine were a big hit. Weren't they one of the big draw cards for Laneway?
Well, I was a bit cross with them.
Okay.
Because they pulled photo accreditation
That's right.
About 2 hours before they were due on stage. So a bit naughty that was, Florence, if you're listening.
But this time,
now there's all manner of lesser names. I won't go through the whole list. The best name of band of all is going to be King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. You can't beat them, can you? There's like Kiwi bands, sort of psychedelic type stuff. But the big headline band is the 1975.
Okay.
The British pop rock band. They're from Manchester.
Okay, thank you.
They're huge.
That's why you know, because they're from Manchester. That's why you know so much about them.
I saw them here a couple of years ago.
Okay.
They're not the best Manchester band ever, but they're certainly not bad.
Okay.
But oddly enough, they're not even the one I'm actually kind of excited about.
Oh, okay.
Coming back to the Troye Sivan review yet again.
Yes.
Do you remember? Let's see if you were paying attention when he was talking to you. Who did he famously do a duet with that Debbie said she'd seen earlier in the year?
Oh, you bastard. no, it's gone. Slipped from my
Charlie XCX.
Oh, that's okay.
He's going to be there as well.
Okay.
Now, I've seen her a couple of times.
Yes.
In stadium shows.
Mm-hmm.
She opened for Sia.
Okay.
And she opened for Taylor Swift.
Okay.
And she's very, very good.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I don't know why I like her. She's not the kind of music that I usually embrace. She really isn't. But she's a fantastic performer. She's really good on stage.
Okay.
It's sort of like kind of electro-ish pop. You won't find, you know, a 6-piece horn section behind her.
No.
But she's a really, really good, really energetic, really powerful performer.
Wow.
Within a genre I have very little time for, she's one I've actually really got a bit of a soft spot for.
Great. So it's a good recommendation.
So I'm looking forward to seeing her. I'll enjoy Laneway, if only for her.
Lovely. I'm just going to mention one piece of music.
Go on.
Which follows on from my discussion a episode or two back about the new Springsteen album called Western Stars.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
So he's not touring to support that album.
No.
What he's done is he's putting out a feature movie.
As you do.
So it's a combination of recording the playing in front of a small audience.
Yeah.
And I think intercut with sort of other scenes of him in the Southwest, which is where a lot of the record is set, and it's a combination of song and script written by him, reflecting on what the music's about.
Yeah,
I've seen just a little trailer for it. I mean, me being a Springsteen fan, I'm going to go and see it. I think it's due for general release in October.
Yeah.
I suspect it won't be on for very long.
No, films like that, to be fair, they don't get massive.
No, and I haven't been able to find yet the exact date of release, but just mentioned that for those of us who are Springsteen fans, it sounds like a good thing to see, and to acknowledge he's just hit the 70 mark, as you alluded to a little earlier.
September the 23rd,
and he has mentioned in recent interviews that he has actually gone and written a bunch of new songs for the E Street Band.
Ooh.
And he will tour those. That's not this year, maybe it's next year.
But you're right, that's pretty much a given. Even if he's not publicly announced that, you know he's going to... If they release those songs, they're going to get toured
out. So there may be one more opportunity to see Mr. Springsteen on our shores. You never know.
And I'll tell you what, I'd go.
Good.
I might not be a fully paid up member of the church, but I'm certainly an acolyte.
Oh, good.
I was impressed,
All right.
So we've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, we do. And I hope you have a good little trip in the UK.
Absolutely.
And when you get back, we'll do this again. And
you're on.
We'll compare notes and cultural observances.
Sounds good to me.
But in the meantime, if you'd like to check out more about what Steve and I have been talking about, we've got this fantastic website.
We do indeed.
Cravepodcast.com.
Absolutely, yeah.
Steve keeps it very much up to date with all the announcements of what's coming up.
I do my best. And so if you've got any comments at all for us, email reaches us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
That's right. And we're on Facebook.
We are indeed.
We're on Instagram.
We are. Yeah, all the cool kids.
Twitter handle is @cravepodcast, is it not?
It certainly is. Yeah. All same for Facebook and for Instagram.
Excellent.
So we'd love to hear from anybody who's got any comments about anything you've had to say tonight, unless you're going to tell us how good Stevie Nicks was. Tell us that anyway.
We thank you for listening and for watching. I'm Simon Mercip.
I'm Steve McCabe.
That's what's been entertaining us this week.
Certainly is. Nice one.